I played a tricky one here. I didn't put a presentation up, and he didn't have a slot for it. But what was listed for a poster for Jim is here. It's future needs and uses of crop modeling. So Cynthia didn't get the last word. Jim did.
Well, it's only fair. But, you know, first thing I want to say is thank you very much to Joe, to Bruno, and Cynthia, who organized this, this recognition. It's a real honor to be recognized here. And it's also an honor for me to have the people who came here, stayed extra time, traveled from France or the UK or other faraway places to be here to help recognize some of the things that I've done and been involved in the past. So it's really an honor. I'm actually relieved now that it's over. I was worried about what kind of stories my wife might have told to Joe or Ken, and of course Ken and Gert and others know a lot about me anyway, but I was afraid this was going to turn into a roast, but anyway, I really enjoyed the presentations. They were quite good, and I've certainly enjoyed being associated with all of you here. Future needs and uses of crop models. I've got a few things to say. I'll try to keep this to about 10 minutes. Again, I planned to do this, and then the program got messed up, so if you'll bear with me a little bit. But disclaimers, I'm going to be mentioning a few names, and I'm worried about leaving out people's names who've really been important, but just in my retirement age, I forgot about or something. So if you'll bear with me on that, I'll continue. And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail. I think Joe started it, and Ken actually started, and then Joe and Gert and Phil and everyone has given a lot of the history about DSAT, the modeling courses that we gave, and many people have been involved with. I've got some trends in the past, though, to talk about the future. I got involved in this in the mid-1960s, believe it or not. I was working at Texas Tech University at a research center there and had an opportunity to go to work for USDA in Starkville, Mississippi at Mississippi State University, where they were just beginning to work on a systems approach for cotton production. And I met and worked with C.T. DeWitt a little bit, Bill Duncan Moore, and Herb Stapleton quite a bit. And so these are some of the really early folks that influenced me to get into this. And I guess one of the things that was characteristic back in those early days that I would encourage some of you young folks to be aware of is that, you know, read a lot, study a lot, but be bold. Ask bold questions. And when I started this, there were many, many people who thought, you can't really do this. You can model engineering systems and physical systems, but not plant systems at all, or something as complex as cropping systems. So here I am about 45 years later, and it's still going on and growing. So there was skepticism by a lot of people. There were major advances, though, made after that early exploration by in a number of centers. In Wageningen, that was really where a lot of the work was centered. And Thijs Tolendaar is here. He was involved in some of those early studies. Gert Hogenboom, in fact, came out of that school as well. Temple, Texas, with Joe Ritchie and others. And the UK, John Porter and others in Florida. And this is just a list of some of the different models that evolved from those early works. But the thing I'd point out about this is that there was competition there among these few centers that were trying to get going. And, you know, my ideas, my model is better than yours. You're not doing it right, kind of thing. Any of you heard that before? I mean, it's really kind of strange in a way, and it was counterintuitive for me because I was always really wanting to work with people, and it was just kind of strange to see all of that, but it really did happen. In the 70s and on, there was a lot of emphasis on courses and training, particularly in the Netherlands again. It was fairly limited in the U.S. Until fairly recently. Various people have mentioned the Ipsnap Project. Goro Yohara, Fred Beinroth was in Puerto Rico. Joe Ritchie and Henry Nix played major roles, as did Barry Dent, Phil Thornton, and us other youngsters. And you saw some of the pictures. Where did you get those pictures, Phil? I had no idea. Don't give them to Gene. Then, you know, by seeing these models that Joe Ritchie and others were developing and the ones that Ken and I were developing in Florida, and they did similar things, in fact, but they couldn't work on the same data. So this really helped prompt Joe and us to get together and start working on the Ipsnap project to advance this. A number of training programs were developed, building on some of the things that the Netherlands was doing earlier, and we started our first training course in Florida in 1984, I believe, 85, and then we had the first international one in Ipsnat in 1986, I believe, Joe, in Venezuela. Some of the during the 80s and 90s, there were more people that started getting into crop modeling. One of the significant things in the late 80s and early 90s was an international project that Cynthia Rosenzweig led, funded by Environmental Protection Agency, for climate change impacts on agriculture. And that's where the DSAT model was used by people in many different countries. And the results of that were then used for a consistent assessment internationally, and Cynthia and Martin Perry and others published some of the early papers on climate change impacts on agriculture and food trade that have been used and are still in use today throughout all the international agreements and climate change and so forth. There were a number of climate change terrestrial ecosystems, GCTE. John Porter is still here. John, raise your hand. He played a major role in this from the UK then and now in Denmark. John Porter also played a major role in that. John Ingram also played a major role in that. And then in the GCAS and some of the broader things, ICASA has already been mentioned. The applications of these models started evolving to other things. We didn't have in mind in this when I was a graduate student, first becoming interested in applying mathematics and computer simulation to agricultural systems, which I was interested in. I had no idea that this one day would be used in plant breeding and molecular genetics. I didn't even know what molecular genetics was in 1967, for example. Spatially variable management that Bruno talked about today, and John Sadler and Bill Batchelor and others have worked on. Trade-off analysis, John Antle, and some of the economic applications that Phil Thornton mentioned. Carbon sequestration. Now coupling models, crop models at a global scale with the climate, global climate models. But in the last 10 years or so, 15 years, there's not been really two major advances in crop model capabilities. There hasn't been the emphasis on bringing these together and really evaluating the scientific credibility of them in a way that leads to improvements that can be used more effectively and in more mainstream programs. And so there's also been more or less a stagnation in programs for training students. That's not for education in universities, I think. The training, as Gert pointed out, in DSAT has grown. I mean, last year there's probably 4 DSAT training courses, and this year it's going to be more than that. And this is just DSAT. There's also the Dutch modelers and the AppSim have similar things as well. So AGNIP has been mentioned, and I think the stage has been set, as Cynthia said, that I mentioned this morning, that I think it took a maturation of our general field and the people in it before we were willing to really expose ourselves, our scientific uncertainties, and our maybe even mistakes that we had made in earlier versions of models and so forth, to open up and realize that, hey, this is really serious. We need to do a better job of connecting data and models, modelers together, to improve these, because they are being used and they will continue being used, and we need to do better as an agricultural scientific community to do that. Many demands for crop model uses. The way I like to tell students, these are experimental tools. You can conduct experiments in the computer just like you can conduct experiments in the field. You can have treatments of irrigation levels or nitrogen levels or planting dates and varieties, and you can simulate these and therefore greatly extend our capabilities for doing field research, provided they're properly tested. And then these other applications that I've already pointed out. There are many research projects that are making use of models already, and so we think that it's really time for us to, as a scientific community, to make advances that are needed to really serve these growing needs. And this is just a few of them that have been mentioned already. Future uses. Models are needed as key components to address some of the major societal issues, including food security, alleviation of poverty and hunger, that we've been talking about here at this meeting. Environmental issues and trade-offs, increasing use in economic research, increased use in plant breeding. You heard Charlie Messina's talk earlier, and other companies are doing similar things, plant breeders at universities. A key component in social science research, I used to think that interdisciplinary research was get an agronomist and an engineer and an entomologist working together, but nowadays it's economists and social scientists and historians and policy and so forth. Increasing use and extension, the presentation that Keith Ingram made that Joe referred to yesterday as well. And these applications are as important in developed country as well as developing country agricultural systems. Really important issues to address. They are from microbial genetic applications, as Messina pointed out, to the global climate change applications that Cynthia led in the late 80s and early 90s, and that we're embarking on in the AGNIP project. They play a key role, and they capture our disciplinary science from agriculture so that we can inform these other disciplines and have an input as they study broader issues. This is just a schematic of the climate change and linkage to economic models. So in the future uses, the actual needs for this, I think there needs to be a continuing emphasis on real-world data collection for minimum data in agronomic experiments. In fact, what I would like to see is have more of the people who are working on model development linked directly and closely with experimentalists who are conducting experiments. We saw some papers at this meeting where studies are being conducted looking at temperature shocks at different stages of growth, and you can see the sensitivity of something as just as short as a few days of extreme temperature during a particular stage of growth. Do our models capture that? They probably don't. Some of them may. But in the end, if we have people working on models, working closely with people who are conducting those kinds of key experiments, then I think much more rapid progress will be made. There are a lot of improvements in models are needed through testing with these data. And I think Jerry Hatfield just walked in, and he's the one that's organizing this CTW workshop in the Midwest early next year to bring the modelers and experimentalists together to have our first try at really doing this in a big way with multiple crop modeling groups there. Bruno gave a talk earlier, some of those of you saw it. He emphasized new methods for data collection. And I'm glad he did that because I think that that's really one of the key things in the future. And some of these new transducers, the new data systems for measuring soil and crop variables so that it can more completely describe the responses that crops have in multiple environments and multiple management systems is going to be really important. Soil carbon is one of the key variables that determine the productivity of crops in given soils as well as climate, and that's a particularly problematic one, and a lot of soil measurements are, like rooting zone, as you pointed out. That's really, really important for the future, and so I was pleased to see that. Improved methods for model applications. I think those of us who develop models, we may think that we know all the different ways that models are going to be applied, but we don't. There are different disciplines coming in, different ways of applying those, and we need to be ready with the best science that we can to put into the model so that they can be used appropriately for the broader applications that other disciplines will want to do, all the way from molecular scale to global scales. Cynthia mentioned this. We're really excited about this as a community of science coming together to allow us to have a platform and projects and activities that really build on this as we create this community of science. Here's one of the disclaimers. Again, I want to mention a few people who were really instrumental in my career along the way. Joe mentioned John Hesketh. I believe it was Joe, mentioned John Hesketh. He's the one that I worked with when I was in graduate school that influenced me also about phenology, the importance of getting the effects of the environment on the phenological development of the crop and the duration is as much or more important than all of the other aspects that are involved. Ken Booty, when I first went to Florida, he talked about this already, and you know what's impressive to me is that Ken Booty still puts up with me after all these years. But honestly, we've made a tremendous team, and I think all of you have seen the literature. You'll know that there's a lot of Booty Jones or Jones Booty and Jones Booty Hogan Boom and other papers like that. Joe Ritchie had a really profound influence on me, and he still does. He still comes to Florida occasionally and still helps influence my thinking. But particularly in the water balance area and, of course, the water balance that he developed in 1972 and its evolution, still used today. Many of the models that different groups have, that's the origin. It's the Joe Ritchie water balance model. And, of course, it's in DSAD and all of the models that we use as well. Cynthia, through the climate change and fully embracing the systems that we had developed and giving us opportunity to participate in the earlier climate change assessment, and now working with Jerry and myself to lead this new initiative as well. I skipped Gert. I should not skip Gert because...
Thank you, Gene.
Yeah, thank you. I also lose a lot of things, and Gene helps me find them. But, Garrett was a postdoc. He mentioned this earlier. And when he went to Georgia, I was really hoping that he would stay involved. And not only did he stay involved, he is really the one responsible for the training programs to flourish and develop and expand. He and Paul Wilkins at IFDC and now they're just... all over the world, and so we're really grateful, and you'll see a lot of Jones, Hogan Boom, and Hogan Boom, Jones, Booty papers as well. So Jim O'Brien is one that most of you probably haven't heard of. He's the person that I got with about 14 years ago. He came to our university, and he's a meteorologist from Florida State University, one of our big football rivalries in the state. And he came to the University of Florida saying, you know, we can have some prediction capabilities for predicting climate 2 or 3 months ahead of time. He thinks that would be a useful for agriculture. And some of our administrators tried to throw him out of the office and all, but he found me, and we developed the Southeast Climate Consortium, which later has also evolved to the Florida Climate Institute that Joe mentioned, and has led to these extension applications through Florida, Georgia, Alabama, North Carolina, and South Carolina that is still ongoing, and will, it looks like it's got another life ahead of itself. And then there are many more. I mean, Philip Thornton, Bruno, Cheryl Porter, who's really been the secret that Ken and Gert and I have had for a number of years, doing a lot of the work in a very professional and effective way. Dan Wallach, I've really learned a lot from him, and as you advance through your careers, you'll look back and you'll appreciate the things that you learn from different people that you've interacted with. And that's really what I want to say to the people who've listed here. I've listed here as well as many others. I've learned a lot from you, and I've gained a lot professionally and personally from interacting with all of you. And so these are some of my key partners along the way that I greatly, greatly appreciate. And many of you are here in the audience today, and I'm grateful for that. I don't want to leave one of my key partners out, and so I want to, before I forget that, end with a very special thanks to Gene. We met on a blind date in Lubbock, Texas, many years ago, and here we are together, and all I can say is it's getting better all along. So it's not only the crop modeling and the applications that are getting better, but so are the relationships that I've formed, both personally with Gene and my family members, as well as with all of you. Jim O'Brien and his emails, when you get an email from Jim O'Brien, it always says, life is about friends. So I feel like I'm among friends here today, and I greatly appreciate this again, Joe and Bruno and Cynthia, for giving me this opportunity to say thank you to all of you, and I've enjoyed it very much and look forward to continued interactions in the future. Thank you.
Jim said no questions, but I think that there may be a lot of comments afterwards. Don't run off. I believe there's a reception planned right outside. I hope that things are there. And I apologize for not, I should have warned you beforehand that Jim was going to present and that there'd be a reception outside. So you've been patiently sitting and waiting. And Joe, please come up.
Actually, the reception's going to be in here, in this room. They're going to have to rearrange it. It's going to be starting at 5, okay, officially, as far as refreshments in here are concerned. But we want to start it now, basically. Jim and Gene are here, and you can greet them. I know a lot of you would like to. In this room are many of the people who have been discussed today, and so we are honored that people are in the room to meet one another if you don't know one another, because this is a great occasion for us to be together. But I suggest that we have Jim and Gene stand up here, and after we are over, and you come and greet them. You can stay. We'll be here till about 6 o'clock, and you know, if anyone's left. Another thing that I think is great about, since Jean was here today, she listened to all of this for for 4 hours, and I don't think she's got up to go to the bathroom. That's pretty good.
So you need to give her a break.
Jean's patience.
That's what's going to happen. I don't know if someone's going to be coming in soon. There's someone that looks official now. So thanks for opportunity.
Okay, thank you.